Hello, I'm Adrian Dodd.
And I'm Maura Dodigan.
Whether we like it or not, we're in bed with the right.
So, Adrian, today we are talking about something kind of sad. We're talking about a murder in Minneapolis, the death of Renee Nicole Good at the hands of ICE officer Jonathan David Ross.
That's right. And it's something that we knew we had to cover the moment it happened at the same time. I think this is fair to say it's not an episode either of us was or is looking forward to. You know, this will be a lot of shouting and a lot of just anger. We're going to try and do as much analysis as we can, but keep in mind, a lot of this is also just us being really, really sad, really, really mad.
This is also a story that is still unfolding. We are recording on Friday, January 9th. Renee died on Wednesday, the 7th. So there's still a lot we don't know and a lot about how this story is going to play out that is not yet clear from where we are, that might be clear or more clear from the time you listen. So, you know, keep that in mind.
Yeah, they will have discovered that she's no angel or something. It's this right down to the fact that this happened in Minneapolis. It's just so sickening and that like all your muscle memories sort of kick back in. And so they do clearly on the other side as well. And the other side is not just Republicans, it's not just MAGA. It's also reactionary centrists who seem to be treating like outrage at what we see in those videos of Renee Good's murder as confirmation of what they've been saying about the foolishness of saying defund the police all along, right? Like everyone is sort of caught in this repetition compulsion and we'll try to avoid that. But it's kind of shocking, just the queasy sense of deja vu that comes with this, I think.
Yeah, we're going to get into a lot of stuff. We're going to get into the role of these like sort of viral snuff films of law enforcement murders of Americans and their role in our political discourse. We're going to get into the role of ICE. Adrian's going to put on his 1933 hat just for a little bit to talk about the role of these secret police forces and authoritarian regimes. And I really want to get into some of the gendered content of right-wing responses to this particular murder, which I think have been very potent and reveal some of the broader themes of the gender dynamics of the U.S. right now.
So maybe I'll give a quick rundown of the incident itself. So on Wednesday, January 7th, a Minneapolis resident and mother of three named Renee Nicole Good was killed by ICE when an immigration officer named Jonathan David Ross basically got angry with her participation in either an observation or a protest of an ICE action, ICE raid, and shot her three times in the head. She was 37 and died immediately at the scene of the crime. The shooting was filmed from multiple different angles by a variety of onlookers. The footage quickly went viral. Also, I noticed that a lot of the eyewitness testimony is extremely compelling, extremely clear, meaning that we almost had a sort of hyper-real version of this, which if you recall, those of us who lived through 2020, I feel like there's often a question of like, oh, there's a single person filming this. Oh, the footage isn't so good. Oh, there could be a lag there. All these ambiguities were basically removed here. And so from the very beginning, it was fairly clear. Like there's no vital context that was missing from those first clips, it seems. What we've learned has more or less confirmed the statements from eyewitnesses and has disconfirmed just about every statement from the Trump administration and from anyone at ICE.
Yeah, this is something that seems to have happened right near a school. It seems that Good and her wife were dropping off their 6-year-old son at school. And the ICE action, the sort of like effort to abduct people they suspected of being immigrants, was happening either like at the school drop-off or very nearby.
Wow.
And so what happened is when this shooting took place, there were already a lot of people with their phones out recording. Because everywhere ICE goes, they encounter sometimes very organized, but often kind of like spontaneous and ad hoc resistance from ordinary Americans. People hate this.
Yeah.
And people record and they heckle and they tell the ICE Gestapo thugs to go fuck themselves. And they sometimes succeed in de-arresting the people who ICE has kidnapped. That's a like proud and really pervasive tradition of the Trump II era, right?
And we should say, maybe for listeners, especially not in the US, who are watching the ICE excesses and the fascist creep in the United States with horror and wonder, what are people doing? How can people tolerate this? Please remember that ICE is being sent deliberately into heavily democratic cities and essentially are meant to put people in democratic-dominated cities in danger because the Trump administration hates us and doesn't think of us as fully human. Just to give you an idea of just how unpopular they are, there was a November 2025 YouGov poll that had ISIS disapproval at 85% among Democrats. So those are chlamydia numbers. I think that there are STDs that poll higher than ICE. And even among independents, I think it was something like 62, 63%.
Herpes, not actually that big a deal, but yeah. ICE, everybody fucking hates. Yeah. You know, this is something that was immediately viral. As Adrian said, there were a lot of different videos because these people were already recording. And every single video of the incident confirms that this was a pretty cold-blooded murder, right? There was some kind of like verbal confrontation between Good and her wife and an ICE officer, and they were trying to drive away from him when he decided to punish them for talking back, basically, by shooting Good in the face multiple times as she tried to drive away.
And even the ICE shooter himself was filming the whole thing, and the video was just released and treated as this kind of exculpatory piece of evidence by, among other things, U.S. Vice President and noted piece of shit J.D. Vance. Well, in that one, he shoots her three times and then says, fucking bitch. So the whole thing smacks of gender is sort of my suspicion.
Yeah, I want to talk about that video more, too, It shows the shooter's point of view and his interactions with Good and her wife in just the seconds before he murders her. But, you know, this is something that the administration, as you said, Adrian, rushed to not just spin, but sort of like exploit for propaganda purposes, right? The administration immediately, as these videos of this murder were going viral, told evidently, obviously, disprovable lies about it, right? They said that the ICE officers were stuck in the snow. No, they were not. They said that she charged them with her vehicle. No, they didn't. They said that she hit the shooter with her car. No, she did not. They said that she was threatening people, that she was a domestic terrorist. No, she wasn't. Her last words were, "I am not mad at you." That seems to be the last thing she said. And she said it to the man who then proceeded to shoot her. So this was something where the public smears against Good, coming from the likes of Kristi Noem and J.D. Vance, cast this woman's death kind of as an affirmative good, right? They cast her as this enemy who was defeated and which the administration got to feel good and triumphant about defeating, right? So really like celebrating the death of an American citizen and lying about her and trying to cast her as a criminal and as a terrorist and as a threat. So large-scale protests ensued really across the country like pretty quickly. This was something that really captured people's imaginations, I think in part because it was filmed so much and people could watch these videos, these multiple videos. I've watched at least four or five different videos of this murder and its immediate aftermath. And in Minneapolis, the city actually closed down schools, like the one that Good was killed in front of, like the one where she had just dropped off her son, because children and parents' safety from ICE could not be guaranteed. And ICE agents in Minneapolis were actually also videoed destroying a makeshift memorial to Good that was erected at the site of her death.
During ICE's incursions into various cities, Democrats have sometimes kind of held their tongue, and there are a couple of reasons for this. Again, now mostly speaking to people who do not live here, part of that is that Democrats over the last 5 years decided that defund the police was bad and that progressive prosecutors were bad, that maybe letting police forces be unaccountable was a good thing. Well, it makes it hard to then speak out against the SA once it comes into your neighborhood and starts roughing up, you know, the PTA moms, right? So in places like LA, that was a very hard thing for them to do. They couldn't really say you guys are out of line because they had just doubled down on police unaccountability, right? That is not true for Hennepin County. Minneapolis has a progressive DA, and it has, and its governor, the state of Minnesota, Tim Walz, who was on the ticket during the last election, and therefore has little incentive, let's say, to try and curry favor with Donald Trump, a man who hates him anyway. And so the stuff we got out of Democratic officials, out of Minneapolis, was also unusual in its candor and its ferocity. The mayor of Minneapolis on live TV told ICE to get the fuck out of Minneapolis, which I think is fantastic. Democrats were unusually quick in seeking common ground with the people protesting this, as opposed to sort of lecturing them about civility and differences, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, like, the pundits eventually would get there, but like the elected officials, from Tim Walz to Mayor Jacob Frey, very, very quickly said, like, this is all on ICE. This is not on anyone else in this altercation.
Yeah, I mean, at the time of this recording, the Minnesota prosecutors have still not charged Ross, the murderer of Renee Good, with any crime, even though they are entitled to. I think they are trying to get their ducks in the row, but I hope they do charge him, because that is a fight worth having with the administration, is whether ICE officers can murder people with immunity and not be subject to state laws against things like murder. But, you know, I think also another thing going on with the Democratic politicians who lined up very quickly behind the people of Minneapolis and against the secret police is that the Democratic electeds are trying to not give the administration what they want, which is like large-scale protests that they can plausibly call violent, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that this is a scenario that very much evokes George Floyd, right? This is a viral video of a law enforcement murder of an unarmed civilian.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing that animated over and over and over again the viral videos of like police murders of Black men that emerged throughout the 2010s and then crescendoed in 2020 and propelled the Black Lives Matter protests. And I do think one thing that the administration wants is a chance to do the summer of 2020 over again. Yeah. And be more violent this time, you know.
Yeah.
And crack down more and send in the troops and, you know, shoot a bunch of people. They want mass unrest in the streets so that they can have not just a Kent State, but really like a Tiananmen Square style, yeah, like authoritarian display of repression.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think crackdown is putting it mildly. They wanted to open fire in 2020. They take themselves as having been emasculated by the fact that they didn't murder Black Lives Matter protesters by the score. This is their do-over, they think. They want to see blood run in the streets. And I think so do the ICE guys.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't looked much into this Portland incident again, but like, it's noticeable that these things are sort of happening in rapid succession. They want to bait people, right?
Yeah.
They want to be made feel insecure, which, as the Trump administration, but also the New York Times has assured us, is when an officer is always absolutely justified to unload a clip into a civilian who's unarmed. And yeah, that's what they want. They want to be made to feel unsafe,
yeah,
so they can kill.
I don't think that is actually an argument for not going out into the streets and protesting,
no,
right?
No.
Like, that's not at all what we're saying, as our text messages can attest.
Do not look at our text messages.
But like, I think it's useful to put this in context, right? Because like, as you said, Adrian, Minneapolis is a very blue city in an unusually blue state, right? This is the home of Prince and a solidly Democratic city and state. It's a liberal place.
Yeah.
And roughly 2,000 officers from ICE and a couple of other immigration agencies have been sent to Minneapolis over the past few weeks. In fact, right before Good was murdered, I think the day before, Kristi Noem went to Minneapolis to announce that they were sending even more ICE officers, because the Trump administration has been trying to target and like really persecute the Somali immigrant community there. There's a big Somali refugee and like first and second generation Somali community in and around the Twin Cities in Minnesota. And Donald Trump doesn't like Black people, and he has sort of whipped up these accusations of social services fraud by members of the Somali immigrant communities. He actually succeeded in getting Tim Walz to give up his own reelection campaign,
yeah,
through the pressure of this. And that's, you know, that is a racist crusade from the Trump administration. And it's also a retaliation campaign against Tim Walz, who, as you mentioned, was Kamala Harris's running mate.
I mean, given that we're going to be talking about viral snuff videos, this whole thing started. The recent targeting of Minneapolis seems to have its origins in a bunch of right-wing, I mean, journalists in heavy quotation marks, but right-wing sort of agitators seeking to gain access to daycare facilities in the Twin Cities. And then when they were told by the daycare workers that, of course, you will not let a heavily armed no-neck dude or professional, like former pro wrestler, into your fucking daycare just because he says he's like checking up on fraud. Basically, they decided that these were like illegitimate or that they were hiding the kids or whatever. So there's also like, this comes out of the kind of right-wing entertainment complex. Right-wing video content creation kicked all this off.
So like in other cities that have been subjected to these ICE surges, which as you mentioned, like our blue cities, Los Angeles, Chicago, San Francisco, our hometown only avoided this fate because some of the tech billionaires that call this place home personally intervened and asked Trump not to cause them the headache. But, you know, like these other towns, Minneapolis has seen these big anti-ICE demonstrations, right? Like citizens, residents, witnesses, they're gathering sometimes on purpose and sometimes in these sort of like spontaneous ways to try and obstruct ICE raids. People see this happening and they step in to stop it. And they are doing so at massive personal risk. That is, in fact, what Renee Good was doing, right? She stopped what she was doing because she saw this injustice happening and took out her phone and said her piece and tried to make these people aware that not everybody agrees with them. Not everybody is okay with what they're doing. Not everyone is comfortable with the injustice they're inflicting on their neighbors. Doing that is what she died for.
That's right.
And these ICE agents are meeting these daily impassioned resistance movements and resentment, like vocal resentment from ordinary Americans as they try to kidnap these people off the streets, right? They are being told that they are hated and that they should go fuck themselves all the time.
Yeah.
I absolutely approve of this.
Yeah, they suck and they should go fuck themselves.
They should not have a moment's peace. They should be told that they're pieces of shit every moment of their lives. So like they're getting jeered at. Right. And Good was just one of many, many people that morning who had stopped to observe and try to obstruct their operations in Minneapolis. So like lots and lots of people do this wherever ICE goes. Right. And as the raids have continued, both in Minneapolis and sort of across the country, ICE is killing kind of a lot of people in the course of their operations. So since Trump returned to office a year ago, this like newly empowered and expanded ICE force has been opening fire kind of a lot. At least 14 shootings at the hands of ICE have happened in the course of their kidnappings over the past year. And that's not to mention all the people who are dying in ICE custody in these crowded, dirty concentration camps, really, and detention centers, where these migrants are being subjected to violence, forced to endure horrible conditions, and often denied medical care, showers, toilets, and adequate food. More than 30 people have died in ICE detention over the past year. And look, because they are empowered to commit violence with impunity, because they are told that they are the vanguard of this movement that is victimized and persecuted but righteous, because they are doing something that promotes righteous moral outrage from the citizens and ordinary people in this country, they are going to keep killing people. This is going to happen again.
Yeah. Well, and you forgot to mention, because they're all fucking masked and because they're allowed to be masked and because there's no accountability, these are psychopaths. Why would you sign up for ICE in the year of our Lord 2025? Like, these are not well people. And then you give them full impunity. Officers have to wear a badge number. I mean, they don't always, but like they are supposed to. And like these guys aren't. If my students wore that in the face, they get expelled from college. But like these guys get to march through your like local Kroger's that way.
I mean, they are a secret police force, right?
Yeah.
And what I mean by secret police isn't that like nobody knows about them. Everybody knows about them. It's very ostentatious what they're doing. As you said earlier, they're filming themselves. Part of their purpose is to create online content, as well as inflicting real violence and kidnapping and hurting real people and definitely engaging in a real ethnic cleansing effort. But they are concealing their identities and they have been allowed to conceal their identities, which means that they cannot be held responsible.
Yeah. Let's briefly pause for today's sponsor. Hilton, which allows ICE officers to stay at their hotels and which has dropped the Minneapolis hotel over canceled ICE bookings recently. If you patronize Hilton, fuck Hilton. Do not go to Hilton. Anyway, that's the word from our sponsor, Hilton Hotels. Fuck these guys.
Yeah, do you want to tell the Hilton story real quick before we move on? Because that happened just the day before she was killed, I think.
I believe so. I think January 6th.
Yeah.
So there was a Hilton Hotel in Minneapolis that had refused to accept the bookings of ICE agents. I think it was actually a Hampton Inn. And DHS put that on X, you know, the white supremacist platform, formerly known as Parler, formerly known as Gab, formerly known as Der Stürmer. And after that, Hilton cut ties with that hotel. I'm sure this comes after Elon Musk chimed in for his favorite people, namely white supremacists. And I'm sure it came after relentless pressure on Hilton's billionaire owners from other billionaire owners. But yeah, don't go there. And if you do happen to be in the greater Minneapolis area and you do want to give people your business, I believe it's the Hampton Inn in Lakeville. You should go and you should tip everyone and stay there and thank them because they're the good guys here.
Good for them.
Yeah.
But that was like a whole other victimization episode.
I know.
That ICE was creating just like a day before they murdered somebody. And I think it's interesting that this sense of their own victimization, their sense of their own grievance is, I think, part of what is going to continually compel ICE to keep on killing more people, to keep on feeling like they are, you know, oppressed, beset upon little babies who just happen to be armed to the teeth and, you know, have their faces concealed.
Gee, who does that remind me of?
Right. So there's this like simultaneous sense of like empowered authority and like demonstrated domination and also a sense of victimization and sort of a need to be avenged. It's simultaneous, right? And this really does remind me a lot of the way you described the early Nazis, Adrian.
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, like this ability to take over the levers of state, to visit incredible violence with absolute impunity, and at the same time be the wittlest victim is something that the SA especially indulged in. The Gestapo, who we can talk about a little bit as well, so the actual secret police functioned a little bit differently. But definitely the idea that our paramilitary violence being met with any kind of resistance is actually, you know, a sign how we are set upon, how we are martyrs for the cause and martyrs for the country. That's something that runs through the early months of Nazi rule very, very strongly. And it's looking back, it appears to have been both about the self-conception of SA members, of Nazi Party members, and it was also about manufacturing consent. It was supposed to buy the silence of people who were like, whoa, these SA are pretty rough. It's like, well, but shooting at them is really not good either. Or really like throwing a brick. I shouldn't have thrown a brick, you know?
To be clear, Renee Good did none of this.
Exactly, right?
She didn't throw a brick. She, according to the videos we have, chatted calmly and did not agree with everything the masked armed man said to her.
Yeah. But I guess I'm thinking of famous cases in 1933 where you know, some of the communists did have guns and some of them did shoot back when they were shot at by, you know, armed paramilitaries. And, you know, in the end, the armed paramilitaries got a state funeral and they got the concentration camp, right?
Right. I think that is like an interesting place to maybe pivot to J.D. Vance, who was clearly sent out to do a cleanup job, right? Yeah. Like kind of clean up on aisle six. And yesterday, in the aftermath of this murder by, you know, agents of the regime, he was sent out to do a press conference in which he blamed Good for her own death and cast the shooter as a victim. He particularly alluded to the shooter's past trauma. And he said that Good should have obeyed orders.
And today's sponsor, we should mention, is Yale Law School, which brought us J.D. Vance, who can tell you that, in fact, of course, an officer is entitled to fire into a moving car if he doesn't like what the person inside is saying. Oh, wait, Google tells me that that's not true. Yale Law School, what are we teaching your kids? Anyway, back to your regular scheduled programming.
I think listeners will be aware of my long-held abolish Yale stance, but I do think it's like really worth dwelling for a moment on the ugliness of that performance that he gave.
Yeah.
I think we're used to having very low expectations and sort of being immune to shock. But the vice president of the United States went on television and said that a law-abiding mother who got shot in the face deserved it.
And a man who, let's not forget, passed the bar, right, went to law school, knows what the law is, and knows full well the ample, the over-ample rights, frankly, that police officers enjoy in this country. And ICE isn't even the police force, but still, he knows that this guy wasn't allowed to do this. But he's lying anyway. I was going to say, imagine if a doctor did that. But I don't have to. It's because that's the Surgeon General, so who cares?
I mean, I might have less reverence for people who've passed the bar than you do. I know a lot of lawyers. They let the stupidest people in the world become lawyers, Adrian. Like, the most stupid, evil people in the world will be given a law degree. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I'm wondering, like, if maybe everyone involved in the teaching, promotion, and education of this man at Yale should, resign, bitches?
At least somebody should have to give their money back, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, this might be a nice place to pivot to some of the gendered reactions from the right to this video. So Renee, unlike many of the victims in the viral Black Lives Matter videos, Renee was a woman. She was a white woman. And she was partnered with another woman. It was her and her wife who had just dropped off their son. And, you know, her wife was pretty visibly queer. You know, there's all kinds of nuances in queer identity, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know these people. It looked to me like a pretty discernibly butch femme couple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And her wife seems to have gotten out of the car to videotape the ICE activities and to have exchanged words, according to this body cam video that came out today, with the man who then went on to shoot Good and murder her. And so the gendered reactions that came from the right contains some pretty potent homophobia.
Oh, yeah.
As well as what we might think of as more like straight, uncut misogyny, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There's the homophobic misogyny of belittling her relationship. So a lot of people on the right and a lot of news organizations repeatedly referred to her wife as her partner, which is something I noticed and felt uncomfortable with. A lot of straight people were like, well, I call my wife my partner. Or I call my husband. I was like, yes, sweetie, I know you do. But, you know, it's not the same when you do that voluntarily as when your relationship is being presented in an official capacity after your death by people who have an interest in diminishing the seriousness of that relationship, right? Her son's grandfather was quoted in a lot of newspapers as insisting that the boy now had no one and needed to be raised by him, the grandfather, which overlooked the fact that the child was being raised by another woman as well as his dead mother. So there were like a lot of like little diminishments of the seriousness of her marriage and of the status of her widow, who was in one of these videos that I saw. And this is, I think, the one that kind of really fucked with me, to be honest with you. This is like the video I saw that then I couldn't like do much for the rest of the day after seeing it. Is this video of her wife sitting on the ground outside the car, just saying, they killed my wife, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
And like just screaming. And this woman was like, in the first 24 hours after her wife's death, was completely erased from a lot of these media accounts.
Erasure is one thing. It's also pretty explicit, right? I mean, like the New York Post just today had an article, ICE agent who shot Renee Nicole Good in Minneapolis is, quote, committed Christian, tremendous father and husband, family says. Like, oh, huh, in distinction to whom, dear New York Post? Side note, this spot is brought to you by New York Post. If any of your relatives read New York Post, make them the following offers. Tell them you will subscribe to the vilest pornography site in lieu of that fucking newspaper, because honestly, that's better than that shit. At least they're not cheering on murder.
Yeah, there was a lot of like desire in right-wing media to make her lesbianism into like a reason to kill her, right?
Yeah.
So like Jesse Waters went on Fox News and derisively goes, she leaves behind a lesbian partner and she had pronouns in her bio, you know, trying to evoke the sort of like sanctimonious or annoying or malicious queer person in the right-wing imagination in order to sort of like diminish the moral seriousness of this woman being murdered. And then there was also this kind of reaction to these videos from the right wing that sought to degrade Good and justify her death in just like kind of straight misogynist gender terms, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, there's the homophobia and then there's just like, they're like, that lady's a lady.
And yeah, like, okay. As a proud lesbian, I can say that, you know, where the homophobia ends and the misogyny begins can be kind of difficult to suss out. But there does seem to be a lot of potent, just like straight up misogyny in this reaction. So Eric Erickson, which is such a name. It's a very Republican name.
What does he run?
He's a talk radio guy. He bills himself as a former politician. He was like, I was in office. I was an elected. And it turns out he served like two terms on the Macon, Georgia City Council. It's like, all right, wow, you're really blowing me away with your depth of experience. But mostly he's like a hateful talk radio guy.
Yeah.
And he tweets, an awful, affluent white female urban liberal is dead after running her car into an ICE agent who opened fire on her. Progressive whites are turning violent. ICE agents have the right to defend themselves. I looked it up. His awful, affluent white urban female. This is an acronym he's been working with for a couple years. He's like trying to make fetch happen.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's really just like sort of pointing out, like, this is a woman. Like, woman did it. Woman bad. Woman annoying. She was not, in fact, affluent. She seems to have been from a pretty working class, like salt of the earth background.
And her violence was to say, I'm not mad at you, to the officer who was about to kill her.
Yeah, so she did not, in fact, run into him. He's fucking fine. And he had no reason to be scared. And in fact, I do not believe that he was scared.
No, he was angry.
He was certainly not defending himself. No, he was angry. You know, this video, we should probably describe it, of the body cam, shows the officer talking to Good's wife. And she says, go get some lunch, big boy. You know, kind of implying that he's fat. So, you know, he has this experience of being emasculated by a butch lesbian.
Yeah.
And then he walks around to the driver's side of the vehicle. And Good says, it's okay, dude, we're not mad at you. And then she starts driving away. And then he fires three shots. And her car crashes because she is dead. And he says, fucking bitch.
Yeah.
And that was the video that this guy leaked to the press thinking that it made him look good because it shows that somebody talked back to him right before he opened fire. And he thinks that being emasculated by a lesbian justifies his decision to commit murder.
Which, I mean, it makes sense that that pitch would prove persuasive to Eric Erickson, who last time I checked looks like a single testicle attaining sentience and then losing it again.
Yeah, he looks like a Mylar inflatable balloon in the shape of a ham. He's he's a very puffy man.
He's a puffy man.
And I think he should also, no, I'm not going to say that.
Yeah.
But you know, like this is part of this kind of broader gendered schema in the MAGA imagination, which has, you know, tribes, right? Like we talked about the Trump administration really pitching this woman's death as a victory for them. It's like one of ours got one of them and now there's one less one of them. But this kind of like us versus them division of the United States into a pair of warring political tribes is very gendered, right? Because the American left, as represented in this story by Good, is feminized. Yeah. And the American right, as represented by Ross, the murderous ICE agent, is depicted as a man, right? Yeah. So this murder of a civilian woman by an armed, you know, male agent of the state, or should I say agent of the male state, is sort of like both a pantomime of the right's domineering violence against the left, but also is very much like a weird symbolically reasserting male dominance over women.
Yeah.
We are beating our wives. We are raping. We are saying that women can't talk back to us, can't challenge our authority anymore, right? So liberals and women are conflated. This specific woman is made into a symbol of all women and all liberals. And there's rhetoric suggesting that her queerness, i.e., I think in this case, like her non-sexual availability to men, her non-sexual compliance with the male-dominated heterosexual order, is part of what justifies her murder and makes her disposable. And I wanted to like point out this tweet. Adrian, could you describe this tweet?
The one from Alexander Augustine?
Yeah, somehow I don't think that's this guy's real name.
No, but he has a blue check, so thanks, yeah. Elon.
At Wurzelroot.
Yeah.
That probably means something really racist. But it's a tweet that has a picture of Renee Good.
Yeah, and then says, I feel like I have been condescended to by a woman who looks like exactly like this thousands of times. Yes, Alexander, I'm guessing you're thinking of your mom.
Yeah, and this is right-wing gender politics in a nutshell, yeah. Right? Like, the MAGA right really understands women, and I think in particular, like, white women like this, who I think are a kind of specifically animated locus of their resentment, as people who have usurped their status, as people who are above them on a hierarchy unjustly, right? As people who need to be put in their place. And so, you know, at Wurzelroot, this fucking dipshit on Twitter is taking satisfaction in this woman's murder specifically because it is a proxy killing that he feels avenges his own masculinity.
Yeah. And apparently the 1.6 million viewers that saw this tweet agree, probably.
I think there's nobody who's not a Nazi or a bot on Twitter anymore.
Yeah, if you're on Twitter still, get the fuck off, man.
It's not worth it. It's not useful.
Yeah.
There's nothing but kiddie porn there.
Yeah. One tweet that you shared with me says, these women appear to have lived their lives without consequences for anything until now, and they simply have no idea how to handle it. And it's retweeting a... This is all check marks talking to each other. Why do white liberal women do this? They use their mommy mobiles to attack law enforcement, then cry when they realize, I guess, actions have consequences. So, right, taping someone with your phone is an attack. Storming the Capitol, apparently not an attack. So I'm just trying to understand the rules here, because the rules, and I don't think I understand the rules.
In point of fact, Renee Good did not cry. She didn't get a chance to cry because she was shot in the face three times. She was very calm, right? But this idea that the women are out of control, like these women appear to have lived lives without consequence. Consequences for what? For being observing citizens in the public world? Like, what is the trespass that Renee Good committed here? Like, what action did she take that you think she wasn't entitled to take, and justify why she wasn't entitled? Justify why Renee Good wasn't allowed to stop and film what was going on in her neighborhood. Justify why she wasn't allowed to speak to an ICE agent. Justify why saying, it's good, man, we're not mad at you, and smirking a little because she didn't think this jabroni in front of her, like, was entitled to her deference and respect. Tell me why she doesn't have the right to do that, because I bet you think a man had the right to do that.
It's also really striking, right? This goes right back to 2020 and this idea that, like, you demand from protesters, and it seems like these women joined this protest kind of extemporaneously and had to sort of, like, find their footing as they arrived on the scene. Like, you expect from them a level of restraint and professionalism that you then do not demand from law enforcement. It's astonishing. The guy with the gun and all the rights and the fucking face mask, who's supposedly representing the federal government of the United States, that guy gets to be crazy as a fucking loon, but these women, they have to be of a level of professionalism that's just incredible. If you think that that makes any sense, you're Thomas Chatterton Williams writing The Summer of Our Discontent. I'm sure he's going to have something great to say about this, but, like, no one believes that. This is insane. No, the men with guns charging someone and possibly killing them or disappearing them, at the very least, should have greater sense of self-control than the people being mad at it.
You know, it occurs to me that ICE agents imagine themselves entitled to act as if they are living in the world that they are, in fact, are inflicting on other people.
That's right.
Like, it's not the ICE agents who live with the threat of armed masked men being able to shoot them with no consequence merely for being in their own neighborhood or merely for disagreeing with them, right? That's the rest of us, actually. Yeah. That's something everybody but ICE has to deal with. That's something but everybody but MAGA has to deal with. But they want to act, and they are claiming the entitlement to act as if they are under that level of threat that, in fact, they are the ones inflicting, right? Yeah. It's projection. They're committing the violence and imagining themselves as the victim of the violence at the same time. So they get both. They get the righteousness of victimization and the sense of power of the perpetrator of violence at the same time. It's like this fucking snaking in its tail psychosexual circle jerk, right? They get all of these different libidinal gratifications.
Yeah. The other thing we should maybe briefly mention is that, like, just in case this isn't clear to all our listeners, ICE agents are fucking losers. Like, they've been lowering and lowering the bar for admissions because, like, they can't get anyone to sign up for this thing. There's a professor over, I think, at Fordham, John Pfaff, who's been writing about this, who points out that, like, you know, they got all this money in the big, beautiful bill, and, like, it's pretty scary numbers. They're supposed to, I think, get 10,000 new ICE agents in the field. They currently have 6,000, so this would more than double their numbers. Pfaff, I think, estimates they've done like maybe a tenth of that. They're having a really hard time recruiting because, like, while there are a lot of Americans who belong to the shit-ass community, turns out a lot of them are also in no state to serve on any kind of law enforcement body, you know, what with the various sex crime convictions, I'm guessing. And yeah, they're really struggling. What you are getting there, what's pointing the gun in your face with perfect impunity, and what's possibly pulling the trigger is the bottom of the fucking barrel, just so we're clear.
Well, you know, ICE is also an ideological project, right? You don't sign up for ICE. There's like, listen, some of my best friends are losers. Like, I have a lot of admiration and affection for
the loser community.
For the loser community. Yeah, it's just like people like to be like, oh, these fitness regimens are actually like, the fitness standards are actually like not that high, right? It's like some of us do that every morning before we go to work. But like being able to run a mile and a half in 15 minutes is not a moral accomplishment, right? A lot of morally good people can't do that. People sign up for ICE because they're racist and small-minded and cruel and they have no self-respect or source of personal esteem. And they want to hurt others, right? People sign up for ICE because they are bad people who are morally deficient. And so it's okay to tell them to fuck themselves.
And this has been true since the beginning, right? Just so people don't say like, oh, well, you know, that's because Trump, you know, perverted the mission of this. This is a outgrowth of the war on terror. This was created alongside DHS through, I believe, the Patriot Act, right? ICE is a creation of the post 9/11 paranoia. And you can imagine the kind of person who signs up for ICE in 2007. And that guy ain't no picnic either, frankly. It's not like, obviously, someone who joins in 2025 or who joins in like 2019 is an absolute psychopath. I don't know if the guy who joins in 2009 is that much fucking better, frankly.
No, and, you know, I think it's good to point out that ICE is a fairly new agency. It's less than 30 years old. We have not had ICE within living memory, and we have been fine without it. And it is clearly detracting from the democratic integrity, such as it is, freedom and quality of life of the United States. And so we should abolish it and reorganize those law enforcement responsibilities differently and prosecute these losers and exile them from respectable life.
Yeah.
So there's this like overarching demand in the good case. From the right, this notion that she should have complied. She basically did comply. I mean, they were barking. They were telling her to get out of the car. They were telling her to drive away. They were giving her these conflicting orders. And she didn't pose any threat to anyone and didn't hurt anyone, except, you know, this pussy-ass ICE agent's feelings. But this notion that she owed the ICE agent, that she owed Jonathan Roth deference, right? That she should have considered his feelings, as J.D. Vance said, his trauma at having been injured a year ago when he was chasing down a migrant and did something else with a car. He stupidly tried to go into this guy's car and he got dragged away by the car. And that was his own stupid fucking fault. But this notion that good had to defer to this guy and that she assumed responsibility for his behavior.
Yeah, she needs to mommy him basically while he's trying to kill her.
Yeah, this touches on Kate Mann's theory of sexism as a moral economy. In which women are seen to owe men disproportionate, what she calls moral goods, right? Things like deference, kindness, solicitousness, attention, care, love, right? They owe these to men, but they are not entitled to them in return. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a decent description of how the relationship between liberals and conservatives is depicted in the US media and political discourse. Liberals are seen to owe all this constant understanding and compassion and deference to conservatives. But conservatives are not seen to owe any kind of consideration or care or empathy or even just humanity to liberals in turn, right? We have to be so nice to them. And they just get to treat us like absolute shit.
Yeah.
And that's because we are inhabiting a political imagination in which liberals are women, liberals are feminized, and conservatives are men, conservatives are daddy, conservatives are these like domestic abusers on a national scale.
Well, they're daddy and they're also your little boy.
Yeah.
Right? They flit between being dads and being sons in like really interesting ways.
I don't know. A lot of straight marriages operate that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, a lot of straight marriages have like one like suffering martyr mommy sex pot and one like tyrannical king baby. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sorry, straight listeners.
Look, we're only observing, we're only calling bells and strikes here. And it's honestly mostly strikes, you guys.
But like that's one like popular model of straight marriage that I think the MAGA right and the sort of like manosphere from which they draw so much of their energy are like trying to reestablish as not just a norm, but like a morally enforced entitlement for American men.
I mean,
right?
It's literally how J.D. Vance describes Usha. In his book, right?
As his mommy.
Like she inducts him into like a higher society. She teaches him all these things that he, this babe of the backwoods, doesn't know. He's both like the provider and like the strong paterfamilias and her whittle boy, you know? Like, yeah. And you're just like, great. Now you're working it out on all of us, you fuck.
If Usha is like J.D. Vance's mommy, maybe she will also trade him for some perks. Sorry, that's mean. But he does deserve it. Okay, so like, you know, if liberals are cast as women, these like wily and untrustworthy beings who are also subject to these like massive moral demands for care and attention to which they are not entitled in any kind of reciprocal way, then ICE is a stand-in for masculinity, which, as we said, is cast as this like simultaneously victimized baby and like domineering force to be reckoned with. They're victims and they're also like kind of simultaneously avengers. And both of these things are always happening at the same time. And I think that might bring us to the role of these snuff films in fulfilling those fantasies. Because we talked a lot about the viral videos of police murders that sort of animated the Black Lives Matter movement. And on the left, these kinds of videos that like now we have this kind of new entry in the genre with these multiple videos of Good's murder. But on the left, these function as like moral documents, right? They are documents of like the righteousness of protest and of the victimization of those who live under state repression. And they're documents of right-wing and state depravity, right? I think they have a similar libidinal function or like inverse libidinal function on the right, where they function really as like a kind of pornography.
Yeah.
Those videos of things like Good's murder, it's being passed around with a kind of like real palpable giddiness on the conservative internet.
Yeah.
And that's because it's a document of right-wing domination, like vengeance, revenge,
it's
against
revenge
liberals
porn.
And leftists and women. They document the hated left in the form of one person, which is here a white lesbian, being punished for her defiance, for her failure to conform and submit. And I'm making this comparison to pornography really deliberately, both because I think a lot of actual existing mainstream porn in the world functions the same way, to like use imagery to like encourage and reproduce and gratify male fantasies of subordinating and dominating women. But I also use that comparison because I think the right watches a lot of these snuff films for the pleasure that they get from them. Like right-wingers clearly take a kind of libidinal satisfaction in watching this woman get killed over and over. They find it titillating. And in Good's case, the murder footage took on a pretty explicitly sexual dimension really quickly, because on X, Elon Musk's social media platform, right-wing users almost immediately began having Grok, the AI bot, generate images of Good in a bikini and in sexual poses.
Ugh.
Which kind of just like makes this all very literal, right?
Yeah.
It's Andrea Dworkin all the way down. It's the hatred has a sexual dimension when it's directed at women by this masculinized right wing.
But it's also this like this joy. It's part of the titillation. Part of it is also just joy in the disposability of women in like a dual sense, in the sense that like you can just use them for your AI slot, but also that you can dispose of them as you see fit. You know, we killed you and now we're turning your images into pornography. It's just this powerful form of double erasure. It's like we get to assign you your place, and your place is in a bikini on this fascist fuckhead's like social media site.
And it is a continuing and sort of expanded kind of domination because it doesn't end even after they've killed her, right?
Even after death, yeah.
It's like how Hugh Hefner was like, I'm going to be interred over Marilyn Monroe so that I can be on top of her for eternity. It's like even her corpse is there for them to use for their own ends. Or like that woman in Georgia who had her brain dead corpse used to incubate a fetus, right? Yeah. The domination can take on this like very morbid necrophiliac quality because it is the death that they are titillated by it. That is their goal and it is their pleasure. So these people, you can't think low enough of them, but I am really grateful to our listeners for trusting us to take on this kind of thing as the stories are unfolding. Thank you for letting us do this and for coming along with us on our journey. And thank you, Adrian, for being my partner in examining this disturbing shit.
Thank you. I must admit that I wasn't looking forward to this, but I think this is about as coherent as I can be about this right now. I think you've put things in great perspective for me. I should say that I'm trying to convince Moira to do another episode about the sort of ICE-Gestapo comparison. I think there's a lot there. It does require a lot more 1933 stuff than I'm capable of mustering right now. I'm just like, you know, I'm just glued to my phone and various media, just as the rest of you.
So Becca Good released a statement about her wife, Renee, today on January 9th. And part of it, I think, might be a good place for us to wrap up. So Becca writes, on Wednesday, January 7th, we stopped to support our neighbors. We had whistles. They had guns. Renee leaves behind three extraordinary children. The youngest is just 6 years old and already lost his father. I am now left to raise our son and to continue teaching him, as Renee believed, that there are people building a better world for him. That the people who did this had fear and anger in their hearts, and we need to show them a better way. She goes on to say, we thank you for ensuring that Renee's legacy is one of kindness and love. We honor her memory by living her values, rejecting hate and choosing compassion, turning away from fear and pursuing peace, refusing division and knowing we must come together to build a world where we all come home safe to the people we love. So that's what I got. I mean, this is a really hard one. It was very difficult for me to watch these videos. I think it was probably difficult for a lot of our listeners to see them as well. So I just wanted to thank everybody who listened to this episode for trusting us to cover this story and for coming along with us on this journey. And I want to say, like, please take care of yourselves.
Yeah, we love you all. And we're never happy bringing you depressing content, but this one feels on a different order of magnitude. Thank you for sticking with us. We hope we were able to shed some light, and you're all shedding light for us. And, you know, let's be there for each other. And thank you for listening.
Thanks. We'll see you next time.
In Bed with the Right is made possible by hundreds of listeners who support us via patreon.com. Our episodes are produced and edited by Mark Yoshizumi and Katie Lau. Our title music is by Katie Lau.